from the noisy studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another sleepless hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Remember when we warned you about a massive cicada invasion last year? I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll reveal that a different monster brood is getting ready to terrorize us all over again this year. Plus, clothing that protects you from ticks, chiggers, and more. And of course, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and historically hopeful hallucinations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up like you scooping up piles of creepy bugs with a snow shovel.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
From the crunchy studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another Apple Blossom Hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's edition of In the News, we present a recent article from my hometown newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, involving my alma mater, Temple University, which the Inky appropriately headlined, "A tree that bears 40 different fruits takes root on a Temple campus." Artist Sam Van Aken grew up on his family's farm in Douglasville, PA. As a result, his favorite medium to create art is grafting, taking a scion, or desired piece of one plant, and combining it with a rootstock of another. This fusion creates a hybrid plant that sprouts the grafted fruit. He explored other mediums for his art, but kept returning to grafting, explains Van Aken, an associate professor at Syracuse University's Department of Art, creating Tree of 40 Fruit, a live tree that sprouts 40 different stone fruits. The first Tree of 40 Fruit was placed on the Syracuse campus in 2011, and there are 25 more in locations throughout the country, including Maine, Indiana, New York, and California. This latest installation was planted at Temple University's Tyler School of Art and Architecture on March 14th. The Temple tree will burst out in white blossoms this spring, and by late summer, stone fruits such as peaches, plums, apricots, nectarines, and cherries should be growing on the branches of the other 40 fruit trees. All the varieties on the Temple tree will be kinds that grow best in Philadelphia weather. Along with beautifying the Tyler courtyard, the live sculpture will also be a means of agricultural preservation, as it will grow varieties that aren't commercially produced or widely available. And yes, students will be allowed to pick the fruits and eat them. To ensure that Temple's tree thrives in Pennsylvania, Van Aken consulted a 19th century bulletin from the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture that listed fruit varieties recommended for the Philadelphia area, and those are the ones he used to graft the sculpture. Yes, climate change has become an overwhelming concern, he notes, but it's one that has been paid heed to in the past. In Gettysburg, the site of the famous Peach Orchard Battle, The Scherfy family was monitoring cold hardiness in their peaches in the 1870s, with the conclusion that long peach blossoms were better for colder climates than short blossom types. Van Aken's trees usually spend their first 3 to 5 years in a nursery, after which the artist carves out a plan to graft them and plant them in soil. Afterwards, he visits them every 4 or 5 years. But unlike his usual multi-fruit sculptures, for this project, Van Aken worked with Temple students to plant a grafted apple-only tree at Tyler's campus in Ambler. This specific tree, he said, is composed entirely of apple varieties and will ultimately grow 40 different types of apples originating or historically grown in southeastern Pennsylvania. Van Aken, who believes an intimate engagement with nature to be essential, is excited to see how the Temple community members respond to the tree in full bloom, adding that seeing a seed grow into a plant is all the magic you need in the world.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will warn you about another invasion of a huge cicada brood. Trillions of the beasts erupting into our lives this summer. I'll tell you exactly where you're going to be visited by these creepy creatures after another of your fabulous phone calls. 610-694-8100. That's the number to call. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Kath. How you doing?
I'm good. Good, cold. Cold,
okay.
But good.
And where is Kathy cold?
Montpelier, Vermont.
Okay. I would expect you would be.
Yeah.
All right.
Sadly, still true.
Yeah. What can we do for Kathy in Vermont?
Okay, well, I have this small, it's really small amelanchier that I planted 2 years ago, like the kind you get that little thing from a conservation sale. Now, last year, it did pretty well, but then during the winter, when we had to have some excavation, there was this pile of big rocks pushed up near to it, and now there's a big ridge of soil pushing on it, and it's tilted about 45 degrees.
Okay.
I felt it, and
okay.
It's still solid.
That's all we need to know. I'm calling the police.
Okay.
this tree needs to be rescued from your possession. It sounds like it's been through purgatory.
It has, but it's ready to leaf out. It's solid. It doesn't wiggle. I just want to try to get it straight again.
Okay. I didn't catch the name of the tree.
It's like an amelanchier, a service berry.
Oh, okay. You got to use the Latin words to try to confuse McGrath, huh? You couldn't just call it a service berry or a June berry. Service berry lives up to its name. It is of great service. It grows quickly, provides shade, and more importantly, the very first fruit of the year, at least from a tree. Now, what's the deal with the soil and everything? Is this going to change?
No, it's kind of behind our house. It's near to some woods. It's just whatever soil was in that spot. It's nothing special.
But, I mean, it's not going to be rescued from the soil crushing against it.
No, because it's pushed up in front of it, like. So it's like there's a ridge.
Is there another place for this tree, someplace less treacherous than the cage of death it's in now?
Well, I mean, maybe, but I think it'll be good where it is. It's kind of near the edge of a woods. I think it'll...
You said that. So true. Being planted really close to the woods is not a positive, pretty much, for any plant. Okay. You got a lot of deer up where you are. You've got, obviously, groundhogs. Probably got evil squirrels. You know, once this tree grows up, you're going to have a hard enough time protecting the berries so that you get some. Now, come on, how about the front of the house?
I suppose I could move it. I hadn't thought of that. I'd only thought about getting it, you know, straightened back up and maybe staking it somehow where it is. But
No. It's time to abandon this car and get a new one. Anytime you pull into a service station and you say, fill up the oil and check the gas, it's time for a new car. And for this plant, it is time for a new location. How is the sun exposure out front?
Pretty much full sun.
And where does the sun come from as it hits the front of the house?
It goes east to west across the roof. So I guess that means that is...
It would face east.
Well, it kind of goes over the house. It would face the front yard, faces south.
Oh, okay. Well, the tree's going to be very happy. So what I want you to do, did you plant the tree?
I did.
And you said it was one of these pitiful little half trees that you get for Arbor Day or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah, from a conservation district.
So
they have their tree sale.
So it didn't have any wrappings around the roots. You got it in a Dixie cup of soil or something.
Yeah, it was bare root, actually.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. So what I want you to do, because now we don't have to worry whether you smothered the roots with burlap or left it inside a cage. Is your soil saturated now, or are you still dry?
It's not too bad. I mean, you know, snow's melting. It's all drying out pretty well.
But I want the soil to be wet.
Oh, yeah. That's no problem.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So I want you to get some help and get a couple of shovels, and starting about a foot away from the tree, dig down straight and make a complete circle around the tree. Then go around that circle again a couple of times until you can actually lift it out, and try to lift it with the entire island of soil. And then get the new hole ready. Remember, you want to plant the tree high. It should end up with its root flare above ground.
Okay,
so don't make it, if it looks like a lollipop, you planted it too deep. Believe it or not, quote, shallow planted trees are much sturdier in storms, because they've had the kind of lateral root growth that really allows them to grip the surface. So you go out to your front yard, and now you do like the Indiana Jones with the idol, finagling, you know, putting more soil back into the hole, taking a little bit out until you get it just right, and then fill the hole back in with the same soil you removed. Don't improve the soil in the planting hole, because that's the soil your tree's roots are going to need to grow out of. You don't want to give them a little romper room where they only have to go 6 inches and then they hit clay. Do this, and as you do it, angle the tree so that it appears upright.
Okay.
You know, in other words, you'll drop it in at the reverse angle. And if it has full southern exposure, you don't have to mess around with angling it so that the sun helps it out. It'll grow up straight from there. And you may have a weird-looking hole, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Then water it deeply. That means I want you to leave a hose drip at the base of the plant for at least 8 hours, maybe 24 hours. Remember, this is just like an annoying faucet drip. You're really saturating the soil. And then do you have access to compost?
Yeah, I could.
Okay, where are you going to get it?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a cemetery near me. they grind all the leaves.
Sorry, not that kind. Wait a minute.
I'm thinking of leaves and trees on a cemetery.
I got to wipe that image out of my mind. Oh, dear.
I never thought of it like that.
Oh, anyway. I'll never be able to not think of it.
Well, they shred all their leaves and they put them in a pile in back and they get local horse manure and they make their own compost in the back.
Yeah, but you'd have to make sure the compost was finished.
Right. Or I could go to garden center. I could go to a garden center.
I think you should go to a garden center for at least a bag of real premium compost. That's one with a brand name and writing and contact information, not a white bag with the word compost stamped on it. So get a good high quality compost starting 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree. Use up all the compost, go out as far as you can in a complete circle. It'll look nice and it'll also be a reminder not to mow too close to the tree, and you're done.
Okay.
Water it during dry spells because this will technically be its first year in the ground. And if you do, you know, go a week without rain, do that drip, drip, drip thing for a good 8 to 24 hours, and that'll really saturate the soil and encourage the roots to grow out and be bigger and stronger.
Okay. I think we can do this.
Then you'll call me back next year to see how you can get to eat some of the berries instead of the wildlife.
Okay. we'll see if it manages some berries.
I'll talk to you next year.
All right.
It may not manage the berries this year, but next year for sure.
Yeah, someday. I can wait.
Yeah, it's not as long a wait as other fruit trees.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, that sounds great. I think we can do that.
All right. Thanks for calling. We love you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for having it. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of yous that I will answer your garden questions live and in person on Saturday, May 10th at the amazing Nurture Nature Center in Easton, which is just across the street from the historic State Theater. The event is free, but you must pre-register in advance with the College Hill Neighborhood Association at eastonchna.org and look for events. And be sure to bring a shelf-stable food bank donation if you can. But don't go registering just yet, because we'll be right back to defeat shiggers, ticks, and other nasty things, and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will get to the question of the week, maybe take a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. But now it is time to welcome our special guest, who's going to tell us how not to get bit by nasty insects and arachnids this summer. Mary Collins is the Vice President of Business Development for Insect Shield. You've heard me talk about them all the time. I wear their pants and socks when I go outside so that I don't come inside with ticks. No pets other than the ones we have registered. But today we're going to talk about another pest that the Insect Shield clothing and other treated clothing with permethrin can repel, and that is chiggers. So, Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
Well, it's great to have you had. Now, your company has been around for quite a while. I seem to remember it when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine.
We have had our EPA registration to treat and sell insect repellent clothing since 2003, so a little over 20 years now.
Okay, very good. Let's get right to the bone of it, because some people are surprised that I recommend a product that has anything to do with a chemical pesticide. But in this case, the chemical pesticide is permethrin, which is a synthetic version of pyrethrum, which is isolated from the leaves of a chrysanthemum daisy plant. And more importantly, it is really our most common sense defense against ticks, right?
Indeed it is. And we bind the permethrin into the fabric fibers of the clothing. So for the pre-treated clothing that you have, you get the clothing and the insect repellent is already built in. So you're not having to do any application yourself. We do sell a spray that you can spray your shoes down, because obviously treating your shoes for many insects that are coming from the ground up, like ticks and chiggers, you want to always make sure you have your shoes treated. But we're putting the permethrin in there, so you're not having to worry about the misuse, the overuse, getting in your eyes, having your kids have any bother with it. So that adds much more convenience to your insect repellent protection that you want to have and you want your family to have.
Yeah, one of the things that makes me very comfortable is, unlike the mosquito repellent DEET, you don't rub it on your skin. It doesn't get into your bloodstream. It never gets into the environment. You don't spray it around where it's interfering with soil life and aquatic life. It's literally in your pants and shoes and shirt.
Exactly. And permethrin, if you do use permethrin and spray your own product, the same thing, you're not spraying it onto your skin. So you bond it into the fabric fibers your own way. The one thing, if you're going to spray your own apparel, and we have instructions, and there's instructions online to make sure you're doing it safely, it's only going to last for 4 to 6 washes. If you're using a pre-treated product like we sell and many of our other brand partners sell, it's going to last, and it's registered for 70 washes. So you can really have the lifetime of a garment, and that can be your outside, your gardening wear, and you know it's protected for the full season, depending on how often you're out there using it.
Also depends on how often you wash your garden clothes.
Indeed, you know. Exactly. That's correct.
That always seemed like somewhat of a waste to me. I'm just going to put them on and get them dirty tomorrow.
Right. Exactly.
Not going out to a formal dinner. Now, how are you pronouncing it? I've always pronounced it permethrin.
Permethrin, permethrin. I mean, I say permethrin. We have many who say permethrin. Either way, it's all good.
So it was the military, I believe, that discovered this chemical when sprayed on clothing, when embedded in clothing, was a very effective tick repellent. Am I correct?
Well, the military is the one who helped develop, like, the process that we do, where we're attaching it permanently and in a factory setting, bound into the fabric fibers. Permethrin itself has been on the market in the U.S. since 1979 in a spray form. So you've been able to go, you know, to your outdoor camping store and buy permethrin and spray your product down. The breakthrough came with the Army and the military involved in when we developed a process to treat it in this factory setting where it can be registered through 70 washes. So instead of buying a spray, it would last for, you know, 4 or 5 washes, maybe a month. You could get it where it's lasting the life of the garment, and that's really a big breakthrough.
Yeah, especially as often as I wash my garden clothes, that's the life of the garment. So really, ticks have become more and more of a problem over the years. I mean, we always knew they transmitted terrible diseases, but they seem to be coming up with new ones all the time.
I've been doing this for a long time, and in the past, I'd say 4 or 5 years, ticks have really become one of our focuses and one of the stories we talk about, especially in the U.S., because ticks are the insect in the U.S. that are really, you know, causing disease. Whereas if you're maybe traveling somewhere where mosquitoes, malaria, dengue fever, Zika virus, that's a different concern. We potentially will have, we have some malaria and dengue in the U.S., but nothing compared to our tick-borne disease epidemic that we're having. So Insect Shield permethrin works extremely, extremely well against ticks. It is an excellent repellent against ticks. And we highly recommend, you know, like I said, having your shoes treated and wearing treated socks and pants. That is a game changer in protecting yourself and your family, because ticks, they're crawling up from the ground. They might be on some tall, like high leafy grass, but they're not getting higher than that. So if you can protect your lower extremities and you can get ticks to not crawl up you, because that's the thing. People find a tick in their head and they go, oh my God, a tick fell from the tree. And I'm like, you know what? That tick actually crawled up your entire body. So we really want to protect the bottom of ourselves to make sure the ticks can't get up, can't get to our exposed skin, and they can't attach.
That's not a reassuring explanation, Mayor. Oh, they crawled all the way up from your tootsies to your ears.
They can and they do, and you can't feel them, and that's the scary thing. So the thing too with permethrin, if you can, even if the tick gets up to your, they say they crawl along your sock, they don't actually fall off and get too distressed. What the studies have shown, even if they get past the permethrin, by the time they get to your skin, they're not attaching. They're so disjointed at that point. They don't have the wherewithal to actually attach and start getting the blood meal from you. At that point, typically they'll fall off. So just that alone will keep the ticks off of you, which is the critical point.
So I've noticed this year in emails from your company that you have, this is like for you, this is the year of the chigger.
Well, yeah, we've been talking more and more about chiggers because everyone gives ticks and mosquitoes and ants, you know, all the attention. But Insect Shield is EPA registered to repel mosquitoes, ticks, ants, flies, chiggers, and midges. So we're trying to tell the chigger story a bit. I, fortunately, never been bit by a chigger, but I hear and I've spoken to people, it is a very uncomfortable situation. You don't get any disease from chiggers, but the itching and the irritation can last for a couple weeks. And the way they do it, and I can go into it, is also really,
people are squirming already. Go for it.
Well, I think the thing to note, chiggers do not bite you. They get on you, they excrete their saliva onto you, and then basically the saliva breaks down your skin cells and they suck up your dead skin cells, and that's their meal.
Right, and these are the larval form. These aren't the adult chiggers.
Indeed. Yes, that's the larval form, and that's their meal, and then they drop off you, and then that's when they transform into their next stage. So the other thing with chiggers, they're actually tiny mites. They're in the arachnid family, which is the same as ticks, but they're tiny, 0.3 millimeters in size, so you cannot even see them. So that's also the other concern. You only know they got you once the bites and the itching starts.
I've heard from people who've had it, and you can feel them.
Yes, yes. So the thing, too, is, and they easily come off. It's not like a tick that you have to be worried about how you're, you know, getting the tick off you. Most people will end up scratching and they'll fall off. Or if you end up, if you have a lot and you get in the shower, they'll all come off. So they're not attached in that way that a tick, like cements themselves to you, the chigger is there and you can easily remove it. It's just then the itching after that's uncomfortable. So basically they say if you do come into contact with chiggers and you're not wearing your insect shield and you do get, you become the skin cell meal for the chigger, you just, you know, after doing, you know, a good soapy wash of your body and then maybe putting on some itch cream, it will go down. But some people say it can last for over a week, the discomfort of the itching.
Just to make clear, these are both arachnids, ticks and chiggers.
Yes.
They're not insects. They have eight legs. But permethrin also repels straight insects, right? Like fire ants or mosquitoes.
Yes. We go by our EPA registration, which is mosquitoes, ticks, flies, ants, chiggers, and midges. One thing to note, like the crawling insects, obviously they're coming right into contact with permethrin, so it works quite quickly. Sometimes with mosquitoes, though, you know, they're flying, so they'll maybe land, and then they're like, okay, I'm not comfortable, I'm getting out of here. So the different insects react a little bit differently to permethrin, but at end, it is an excellent repellent to keep insects away from you. And it is different. There's no odor like you find with a lot of other topical repellents. Of course, if you're going somewhere, there's a lot of disease, we always recommend using a topical repellent as well. I mean, there's a lot of things you should have in your arsenal to protect you and your family from insects. And Insect Shield is one of pieces of that arsenal.
Yeah, one thing that's always reassured me, I forget where I was or what I was doing, but I suddenly looked up and said, thank God the ticks can't fly.
Yes. Many people think they do, but they can't.
Well, and again, you get chiggers and ticks in the same exact environment, right?
Indeed, yeah, the tall grasses, you know, definitely a lot of times like around waterways. Yeah, they're down low on the grasses. One big difference is that the chiggers do have a little bit more of a temperature situation. Like they can be inactive at more of a kind of like, I think it's about 50 or lower, where ticks you can really find, they can be out there all year. Chiggers really, they say about 75 to 85 degrees. That's their prime zone.
And I should mention that we're talking to a representative from Insect Shield, but there are other companies out there that sell treated clothing and treat clothing. And of course, companies that provide the sprays for you to treat your own company, which you'll find in every store that sells camping supplies. Hunters and fishermen knew about permethrin before I did.
Yes. And one thing hunters love is because they don't want any scent. So that's one nice thing about permethrin. If you use ours or you buy a spray, but there's no added scent. And that's something. And also even with a lot of other insect repellents, people don't want any other smells happening. And a lot of times kids are not comfortable with the smell. They're like, oh, this is yucky. So it's an easier and a little convenient way just to put your clothes on and have some protection.
Now, in addition, I go for pants and socks. I figure if they get past me that way, that's my fault. But you guys also sell shirts and wraps and bandanas.
Oh, yep, and picnic blankets, you know, all and really any kind of apparel and gear products. We have a tent. And like you mentioned, we do work with other brands too. So if you go to your local sporting goods store and your, you know, outdoor hunting store, you're going to see other brands that have the insect repellent technology. So if you're a fisher person, there's brands making specifically for fishing, for hunting, for just outdoor camping, for just travel. You can find it in all sorts of products now. Many folks don't know that there's insect repellent clothing. They're used to some protective clothing, but this is the next frontier in protecting us and hopefully getting everyone outside, enjoying being outside, doing their gardening, doing their hiking, and not worrying about getting insect bites.
Yeah, the only downside for me is you're wearing long pants.
Right.
On a hot summer day, but I'll trade that to avoid finding a tick attached to me. I mean,
we do have really tall socks, so you can get the real tall ones and pull them all the way up.
You know, we all know about Lyme disease. That's what really made Americans tick aware. And I think sometimes people just use that as a catch-all term for any tick-borne disease. But I know there's a couple of new ones beyond this, but the one that fascinated me, and I read about it first in medical studies, is the alpha-gal.
Yes, I had a feeling that's the one you would bring up. So alpha-gal syndrome is actually from the Lone Star tick. And actually, the good news about the Lone Star tick is it is pretty easy to identify if you just, you know, look online at a picture, because it literally has a little, like, yellow dot in the top of it. So you can really easy to identify. But alpha-gal can create an allergy in certain people that makes them allergic to meat and meat products. And it is, from the folks I have spoken to that have had it, it just can be, you know, life-changing, debilitating. People can go into anaphylaxis. It could be the point where even the fumes of a meat product can cause a reaction. It's a very scary one. And for the folks that have it, they have to really change their lifestyles. Unfortunately, they can live with it, but a lot of people are not diagnosed with it for a long time because people don't know enough about it and to say, hey, did you get bit by a tick? It's very easy to test for. There's, you know, the blood test can be done. You can say, okay, you have it, you don't have it. But as a disease, you say that to people and they're like, okay, wait a second, I want to, you know, eat my meat. And also, people don't realize there's meat byproducts in many things, even many pills and medications. So people maybe have alpha-gal, they're following the diet, but not realizing, oh, my supplement or my soap or some other product I'm using on a day-to-day basis has some meat in it. So it's a life changer.
Oddly enough, one of the executives of an NPR station I was working for was a remorseless carnivore. I mean, there's, you know, to him...
Yeah.
Dinner was steak and a baked potato.
Right.
And we were talking once, and he hadn't been feeling well. And he mentioned, you know, he had gone out to dinner at this place a couple of times. And every time he came home, he was violently ill, sometimes hours later. I said, tick bite. I asked him what he had for dinner.
Right.
And I said, you got bit by a tick. And he had never heard of it. He thought I was crazy. And And maybe I am, but not about that. So he got tested, and sure enough, alpha-gal. It almost sounds like a science fiction, you know, teenage superhero thing.
Yeah, it does. Yes, it does. I want to be alpha-gal.
Yeah. No, yeah, you don't.
You do not want to be alpha-gal. No, you don't. I want to be beta-gal. But it is. Though that's the other thing, too, I think you part up. A lot of people, you don't make the connection because people are getting sick like many, many hours later and they're not connecting back to their food. And they're like, why all of a sudden? Or they've discovered two people that maybe just thought they have some, like, you know, stomach issues. And they've gone in like, oh, my stomach, you know, I can't, you know, I'm just not digesting well anymore. I'm having all these issues. And they just think they're having like more of a general stomach problem than going in for gastrointestinal testing. And it actually is now they're actually, it's an allergy that they're having to the meat that they're consuming or being around.
And a lot of these people don't even know they were bit by a tick. They never found it. They never saw it. It dropped off. Yeah.
Indeed. I think this is all the tick-borne diseases, too. Many people don't know they were bit by a tick. And one common myth, you know, and this is more relating to Lyme disease, you know, the bullseye rash does happen, but it does not happen in not all people. So that's also a thing to note. So even if you start having symptoms and you don't know what's going on and you're like, well, I didn't get a bullseye rash, like less than half of people actually get that rash. One tip I can give, if you do know that you were bit by a tick and you find the tick and you properly remove it, you can save the tick. You can send the tick in for, like, the University of Rhode Island has a operation, the Tick Encounter Resource Center. You can send them a picture. They'll tell you what kind of tick bit you. They'll tell you what types of germs that tick could be carrying. They'll tell you how long about that tick was on you. And then you can go one step further. You can actually send your tick in for testing. There's a number of companies that do that. And they will tell you if that tick actually was carrying any germs. So you can say, oh, I'm not feeling great. I got sent the tick in. And then you have some information. If you do go to your doctor, say, hey, I was bit by a tick. Here's the type of tick. And I did send that tick in. And it turns out that tick was carrying the Lyme disease germ or the alpha-gal, and you can have some more knowledge. So there's a lot of things about ticks you can do to protect yourself. And if you have some basic information, the more you can protect yourself. And if you do get bit, don't panic, remove the tick, get the information, and then you can figure out if you need treatment.
I was recently reading about, I believe it's a university that provides this service. So if people go online and type in something like tick testing, they're going to find a place that will tell them how to package the tick and then send it in for testing, because different diseases require different treatments.
Yes, indeed. And some states are even offering that they will do the tick testing, so you can look into your state health situation. Pennsylvania is a state that's been very active on a lot of information and protection for their folks. I know that in Massachusetts and Connecticut as well, and like a lot of the states that kind of were originally people think of like as the tick states in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, they have a very proactive health groups that are really making sure the word gets out and giving people education and knowledge. Because if you know what to do, if you know how to protect yourself, like I said earlier, you can go out and you can enjoy nature and not be scared of being bit by a tick and having some potential, you know, life-changing disease or illness.
All right. Once again, we've been talking to Mary Collins, who is Vice President of Business Development for a company called Insect Shield. I know people are scared of spiders. I'm more repulsed by ticks.
Yes. The stories I've heard and the people I've talked to that have been profoundly affected by tick-borne disease, if you hear their stories and hear what they've gone through in life, you'll just put on your treated product every day you go outside because you do not want to go through what they've gone through. But again, I said, if you do get bit, don't panic. Follow the basic instructions. Remove the tick. Save the tick. Get the information. The medical community can help you and you can recover. But let's just avoid getting tick bites in the first place.
Prevention is always better than cure. Once you have a tick-borne disease, it may linger for a long time. It may cause all these terrible symptoms, but your clothing and other permethrin treated clothing, it's like insurance. You'll never know that it came in handy. You'll never know about the tick that dropped off, the tick that didn't bite you, the chiggers that didn't get into your socks and help you come up with all new kind of vocabulary words.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it better myself.
All right. Well, Mary, thanks for being with us, and stay tick-free.
You too. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone that this is the crucial time for you to make sure that your spring bulbs return again next year. Specifically, do not cut, prune, tease, torment, or otherwise remove or damage their green leaves, because those leaves have to collect the solar energy that will grow next year's flowers. But don't go hiding the pruners just yet, because we'll be right back to warn you about the huge cicada invasion on its way and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. Well, in all the excitement of planting and thinning and seed starting, I plumb forget what we were planning to do for next week's show. But as sure as I'm Mike McGrath and you feel lucky, we'll figure out something before it's time for the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden. From the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, I am your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to our dire warning about yet another invasion of a cicada brood. Not the normal number. This is one in the trillions, and it's going to affect a lot of you, and we'll tell you all about it after another of your fabulous phone calls. 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Joe, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mr. Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky. Thanks for asking. How is Joe?
Very good. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it's sunny and about 70 today.
Oh, yeah. Early warm-up days are just so delightful. You want to bottle them up. What can we do you for?
I plant something different every year, and my daughter suggested this season we do loofah, which I understand are gourds. I've done a little bit of research, but I haven't actually planted anything yet, and I understand they need full sun, moist but not soggy soil, warm temperatures. They need a lot of space. They can have long vines. They need a lot of support because the gourds can be very heavy. They're edible before you turn them into loofah and use it in your shower or whatever.
Yes, all of that is true. Why'd you call me? You already know all this stuff.
Yeah, we have a raised bed. We have some space on the side of the property that's a flower garden, vegetable garden, and a space by a fence, which they need a lot of support. So we have a 4-foot-high chain-link fence, but they may need more than that. I understand the vines can get very long.
Yeah, but don't forget a vine can be trained. So when it hits the top of the fence, for instance, depending on how much growth it's put on, you can just let it trail over the other side of the fence, provided you own that side. Or you can then start trailing it along the top of the fence and back down again. A lot of leaf cover would help you get the loofahs ripe enough to use in the smallest amount of space. Now, it's too late to plant seeds for loofahs. Do you have access to plants?
It's too late because it's well into spring.
It's too late because they require a long growing season.
Yeah.
So if you were to have planned on doing this, you would have started the seeds in small containers indoors under light around the same time people in your region were starting their tomatoes and their peppers, which is probably 2 months ago at this point.
No, I had a hard time finding seeds, let alone finding plants.
Well, you know, you got to give them time to germinate. Mm-hmm. Then you got to give them time to grow to a certain size, then you start feeding them, and then very slowly they'll produce flowers, which are edible, and mm-hmm. green fruits, which are edible when small. Now, if mm-hmm. you just want to shoot for the moon and you like the idea of a different kind of edibility, for instance, all squash blossoms are edible. And there's nothing like a fresh squash blossom with some soft cheese in the center. Mm. It's heaven on a stick. And the more you pick flowers off of any gourd-like plant, you know, any squash, the more flowers will appear because you haven't let the flower go long enough to really produce a baby fruit. As long as that flower's open, the fruit has not propagated yet. So if you keep taking off the flowers early in the game, you'll actually be growing a fence of beautiful, large yellow flowers that you can eat. And because you're not allowing the plant to get big enough to go to seed, it's going to keep popping out those flowers at a record rate. If you want to put, let's say, 2 vines in the ground and you dedicate mm-hmm. one to flowering and then the other one you coax along as fast as you can and you let it get to baby gourds, pick those when they're small and see how you like them. You'll find lots of recipes online. And if you want to shoot for the moon, let one or two of them get as big as you possibly can, but it is unlikely that they will progress to the brown brittleness that you need. Before you harvest, you should be able to shake the gourd and hear the seeds of the next generation rattling around inside. Then you peel that brown stuff off the side. And yes, a wonderful bath sponge is in the middle, just waiting to be rinsed out and used. Look for the days to maturity on your growing packet, man.
Okay, I can do that. I appreciate all your help. Thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. You too.
As promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we are calling, "The Cicadas Are Coming Again." At this time last year, we reported that the summer of 2024 would host an unusual event, the emergence of a brood of the world's most unusual insects, cicadas. First, a little math. There are three main types of these colorful buzzing insects, whose overall species name for the periodic ones is Magiceta, a combination of the words magic and cicada. Annual cicadas are just like most other insects. They mate shortly after emerging, and then with cicadas, the females lay their eggs inside the limbs of small trees. After the eggs hatch, the larval forms drop to the ground and then quickly digs their way underground, waiting for a single year to pass. These cicadas have black or brown eyes. Periodical cicadas are another story. They stay underground for over a decade. Then they all emerge at the same time. One of their broods reappears every 13 years, while another brood returns every 17 years. Their timing so reliable that their appearances can be predicted 100 years in advance. Periodical cicadas have very distinctive red eyes and make a lot more noise than the annual types because there's so many of them. This is why you see some cicadas every summer. Those are the annual visitors. And some summers you can't see anything but cicadas. And this year we have the equivalent of a major rock and roll reunion, the return of the very first official brood. To help keep track of their emergence times, specific broods have been given identifying numbers in the form of Roman numerals. This year, we welcome back by the trillions, Brood 14, quote, the same brood that was first recorded in 1634 by pilgrims in the Plymouth colony. Last year's Swarmageddon was a two-brood experience, Brood number 8 and brood number 19, that swarmed over most of the South and Midwest. This year's show will occur mostly in the Northeast, beginning up around Plymouth, of course, down through New York, Pennsylvania, west to Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky, and then down into Georgia. Actually, the reverse, because you'll see the ones in the warmer areas first. What does this sudden appearance of trillions of weird-looking, buzzing, red-eyed insects mean to you? Plenty if you have young trees. While semi-hibernating for 13 or 17 years, slowly sucking on the roots of your plants, causing no damage, the larval forms have gone through several molts, gaining size every time. The next to last molt will emerge above ground, looking kind of like a cicada, but white. So no, you did not discover a rare albino cicada. They climb up on a surface and go through a final molt, leaving their extremely creepy exoskeletons behind on trees, cars, walls, wherever and everywhere. They need to dry their wings for a few days, then the males go in search of females and mate. This is when trees, especially young trees, are in danger. After mating, the females cut slits in the tree branches to lay their 600 or so eggs apiece. They don't eat the branches, but the damage from their slitting can be severe, especially when the attacked trees are still young and small. Now, forget about spraying anything. The cicadas are not vulnerable to those sprays. There are just too many of them, and you'd be harming the birds, toads, and other predators, like the famed cicada-killing wasp that feast on this huge buffet. By the way, those large wasps pose no threat to us, They're just there for the cicadas. One solution is to cover young trees, especially fruit trees, with insect netting, like a lightweight row cover until the invasion is over. Other sources recommend coating young branches with peppermint oil to repel the females. The Morton Arboretum in Illinois goes so far as to suggest not planting new trees this spring in their predicted areas. Instead, leave the trees out in pots in a sunny spot until you hear buzzing, and then cover them with netting or move them to a safer spot indoors. The attack will last only a few weeks. Fall is a much better time to plant new trees than spring anyway. So if you're just now thinking about planting new trees this year, you're in luck. Delay buying and planting the trees until the end of summer, and you no longer notice the outdoor racket. These predictable periodic emergences were first described in Philadelphia, of course, in the 1700s. Following that, naturalists like Jefferson and Franklin started keeping track of the, quote, American locust emergence years. Thankfully, cicadas have no actual connection with true locusts, a form of grasshopper whose huge swarms decimate croplands and anything else they can eat. Native to mostly eastern and midwest North America from Canada on down, all of the cicada broods do not emerge in the same year. That would be extremely unsettling. That's why they name these broods, so entomologists can predict the areas of emergence from year to year, which gives farmers and gardeners time to prepare. My home state of Pennsylvania has seen some monster broods emerge over the past few centuries, and it appears that this will be another such summer. Their emergence time is mid to late April in warm climates to June in chilly ones. That means it is now time to prepare, especially in regions where the emergence will be so dense you can't read the name of the state on an overlay map of the invasion. And no, they don't bite, sting, or otherwise harm humans. Their only defense against predators is their sheer numbers. Well, that sure was a timely warning about the soon-to-emerge Brood 14, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure. Plus, you can peruse a peck of previous questions of the week by following the link for the question of the week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to put cicada lures all over my garden if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming, to our garden shore at our new email site, youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Either way, please include your location. It's really important. Really, I'm serious. Location, okay? You'll find that new phone number, our new Gmail address, a link to the written version of that all-important question of the week and previous questions of the week, links to our podcast, and to the College Hill Neighborhood Association website, where you can go to register for my May 10th appearance at the Easton Nurture Nature Center. It's all at the burgeoning You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when somebody in front of a theater yelled, "Hey, we just had a last-minute cancellation. Is there a funny organic gardener out here somewhere? We're desperate." Our desperate musical director is Ken Queer. Our social media director is Amanda Northfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziproth. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. Thanks to our parasite-protecting guest, Mary Collins. For more information about Permethrin and her company's line of protective tick and chigger products, visit InsectShield.com. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be hard at work moving my pepper and tomato starts into bigger individual containers and starting to feed them for real as we get closer and closer to outdoor planting time. And until I see you again next week.